chanting the Dhammacakka Sutta is a great way to start the rains retreat and reminding ourselves of the fundamentals of the Dhamma, the two extremes that we should be avoiding. So remember those for this rains retreat: extreme of indulgence, so watch out for that. Plenty of opportunities for indulging in a monastery. Sleeping being a favorite one. Eating being a second favorite. Speaking personally here, okay. And chatting being a third favorite. And wasting time doing unnecessary rubbish being a fourth favorite. So these are typically the ways that we waste time in monasteries. And if you keep on striving diligently at those things, you'll make a fine art of them. And you can actually end up perfecting the craft, and you can lie on your deathbed and think, I've got really skillful at that. I managed to spend my last 60 years in robes, eating, sleeping, chatting, and wasting my time. And that's an accomplishment, isn't it? There's a certain degree of dedication and perseverance involved in that. So, but perhaps some others might look back on their 40 years or 20 years or 60 years or something in robes when they're lying on their deathbed. It's a nice thing to think about it, isn't it? You know, to die as a monk or a nun, I think that's quite a nice way to die. And it's much better than dying as a rock and roll star, choking on your own vomit or something like that. And lying peacefully in bed and looking back at all those years of practice and thinking, wow, that was really nice. I actually applied myself, I actually did something. That would be really nice, wouldn't it? What a lovely way to go. And there's a certain dignity to that. So that extreme of indulgence and the other extreme of self-torment. So that means, like in the monastery environment, that means doing things like pushing yourself too hard, forcing yourself to not eat enough, starving yourself, living in a trying to live in a tent or something that you can't even hack it, and being physically impossible to endure, and so on. All of those kinds of things which are done quite regularly in monasteries. And generally speaking, if you find that you have to leave the rains retreat in an ambulance, that's a sign that you've gone too far under that extreme. Okay? Just as a rule of thumb there. So, it's interesting with those things that they're so simple. And yet we do find ourselves regularly still falling into them. And the Noble Eightfold Path, okay? So all of the different factors of the Noble Eightfold Path, of course, you know, we're here to meditate, okay? This being the main feature of our monastery, the main purpose of having a forest monastery is for meditation, but that's done within the context of the Eightfold Path as a whole. We don't fetishize meditation. Okay, don't say meditation is the be-all and end-all of everything. And just meditate and you solve all your problems. This is wrong. It's wrong view. You can't solve all your problems just by meditating. Right view. Problems of view have to be solved by right view. They have to be solved by listening to Dhamma, by discussing Dhamma, by thinking about it, by reflecting it, by reading Dhamma books. This is how you solve, this is how you correct your view, especially in the initial stages. Then the right view which you correct by those means is then purified and deepened by the practice of meditation, especially vipassana meditation, and it finally ripens in the realization of the truth at stream entry. So this is the right view. Okay, and yes, there's a meditative aspect to it, component, but meditation isn't the whole thing. Right intention for renunciation. So this is a really good one to remember at the start of the rains retreat. Many of us here have already taken monastic vows, or at the very least the 8 precept vows, or for those who are not living in the monastery, hopefully taking the five precepts, or at least thinking about them. And so renunciation is a good thing, and it just means a bit of contentment. It doesn't mean you have to live in a cave in the Himalayas for the rest of your life. If you want to do that, that's fine. But if you want to just live simply and with contentment, then that's very good, and that's a very good practice of renunciation. So, you know, go back to your kuti, or your room, or your caravan, or your coffin, or whatever, tonight, and see what kind of extra stuff do I have here. Okay? Now, if you see the good thing about that, if you're sleeping in a coffin, you can't. There's not a lot of room for too many extra accumulations of things. Whereas if you're living in a very big, spacious place, it's very easy for things to pile up. I remember one time when I was staying in Colcliffe, in this little village north of Wollongong, and most of the houses there were kind of old beach house kind of things, fairly small, but there was one big new double-storied McMansion thing with a big sort of double or triple garage underneath it, and the cars would be parked in front of the garage, and I never thought much about it, but one day I walking past and the garage doors were open and the entire huge double or triple garage was full of boxes of stuff. You know, just looking at it, you think, gosh, this is just obscene. It was wasting so much rubbish. So we don't need so much stuff, okay? So go back to your kuti and have a careful look around and see what is there that I really need. And if you don't really need it, then get rid of it, okay? Don't just keep stuff around because you might need it, okay? So one way of intention of renunciation is to, it's the difference between saying, well, I might need it and I might not need it. And so I was discussing travel philosophies with my lovely stepfather Bill, and he was saying, well, you might always need another pair of trousers, and I was saying, well, you might not. So that's the difference. So apply that standard. Well, I might not need it, and so you can always get rid of it, and then if you do need it later on, then usually you can cope with it somehow. So have a look, when you go back to your kuti or your room tonight, go and have a look at that and just really go through all your stuff and get rid of all the rubbish that's unnecessary. It's good to do things like, for example, not keep books in your kuti. And I always try not to keep books, and if you visit my kuti, you usually won't find any books, or maybe just one or two books there. None at all is good, or just keep one or two that you want to read for the rains retreat. Don't have kind of lots of books and then just be picking them up at random and, that kind of thing. If you do have unnecessary stuff, then don't burden other people with it also. Don't go around to your friends and say, oh, would you like XYZ? Because they're all trying to do the same thing, okay? So this is Ajahn Brahm's advice, is just burn it, all right? And he gave this talk famously at the beginning of one's rains retreat, and there was a particular very nice rocking chair which used to belong to Ajahn Jagara, and when he disrobed it passed on to one of the other monks, and it ended up with this German monk, Kantipalo. And then when he left, he used to sort of sit in this rocking chair, and he used to love reading the suttas and studying, and he used to sit in there for hours at a time reading. And when he left, he passed it on to another German monk, Dhammasiha. And then when Ajahn Brahm gave this talk, he thought, what am I doing with this huge rocking chair cluttering up my kuti, and just took it out and burnt it. And so that's good. So have a look, just see what's necessary, what's not necessary, and get rid of things that are not necessary. So this is your practice of the renunciation aspect of right intention. Okay? And just see, what you can give up. What is there that's causing you problems, And as, just to give an example, when I was a young monk, then I realized that I was too attached to my cup of coffee or tea or whatever it was in the afternoon. And so I decided to not have anything with any caffeine or sugar in it until my fifth rains. So that was for about 2 or 3 years or something like that. So I just had like plain herbal tea or something like that in the afternoon for several years. I think I would have fruit juice if I remember right. Yeah, I could have. But anyway, so and then that really made a big difference for me. You know, it gives you a lot of strength when you know that you can do those things. And you know, then as we saw with you know, once you've given up something, then it's okay to have it. It's not a problem because you're not really having it. So, yeah, and then the other aspect of right intention is the intention of metta and kindness and compassion. And so that also is very, very important. So always remember that with the relationships, especially in the community, to have that mind of goodwill and love and care and compassion for everyone in the monastery. And, you know, reflect on how easy it is sometimes to go, may all sentient beings be happy, and you feel that you're so spiritually glorious, and yet you can't even control your anger for one of your best friends or people who are close to you that you live and have to see every day. So, you know, always pay attention to these things. You learn from them. So this is what's teaching us. So there's a lot of people in the monastery now, big crew of people. They're all lovely, okay? All these lovely groups of five khandhas all suffering together. Full of craving and defilement and desires. And people come to me and they say, oh, so-and-so has got some kind of problem or defilement. And I'm like, well, yeah. What do you expect? We've all got our defilements, right? And we all expect that, but we just try to cope with it as best as we can. So be forgiving. If you have to err, then err on the side of kindness. Much better to be too kind rather than to be too cruel and too strict and too demanding. And, you know, it's nice to have that be the feel of the monastery. Many people have commented on the warm and friendly feeling in this monastery. And I think that's something that I personally, I feel really proud of, that we've managed to build a very, very loving and very caring community. Very sweet Sri Lankan monk who visited today, he just wanted to come and say hello before going back to Sri Lanka, and he visited with Bhante Nyanananda a few weeks ago, and he said that Bhante Nyanananda commented to the monks in the community after they'd left about how kind everybody was here and how well the monks were received and how well they were treated. And so, you know, when we are like that, then the good word of the monastery gets around, and so that's very nice. So always be very, very kind to everybody, even if they're going through hard times. We expect each other to be going through hard times during the rains retreat. Stuff comes up, okay? Things happen, okay? There's a pressure. We're creating boundaries. By creating a rains retreat, we create boundaries on space, on time. We limit ourselves. That limiting can create pressure, and then that can come out in all kinds of ways and unskillful behaviors and things like that. This is natural. Expect it. It will happen in a few weeks' time. Okay. So we need to understand each other and to forgive and to accept and to just give each other that space to cope with these kinds of things. Okay, not be having too much of an ideal about, you know, what everybody should be doing and what the rains retreat is, so that, you know, if anyone kind of doesn't, you know, meditate for 37 hours a day, then there's something wrong with them, you know. So that's right intention, then right speech. So this is also something which we should pay attention to, not to speak too much. When we do speak very kindly and very very sweetly, very gently. Remember those very inspiring words the Buddha used about right speech that goes to the heart, speech that is pleasing to the ear, speech which is delightful to the many folk, speech which is leading to concord, which brings people together. So this is the kind of speech which we should cultivate. And it has been remarked by a few people a few times that sometimes in this monastery that the speech gets a bit too cynical. people sometimes are a bit sarcastic or cynical, and maybe sometimes put down people who are practicing a different way or in different religions or different teachers and things like that. And so I apologize and beg forgiveness from all of you if I've done this in the past, and so it's something for each of us to reflect on, that that kind of speech is not wholesome. And you know, if we're discussing you know, different meditation approaches or teachers or whatever, then it's quite appropriate and okay to discuss the benefits and drawbacks, or the positive and negative qualities of these things. It's always the case that those things are there, but that should always be done in a spirit of respect for those people, and not kind of thinking that we're kind of superior to them or anything like that. And of course, what you always find is that those people who are genuinely spiritually advanced don't do that kind of thing, and that they those who are in the position where they could be looking down on other religions, in fact, are themselves never speak in that way. So by using our right speech, we create like a positive and supportive environment for us in our practice. It's very, very precious and very, very rare. We're all here to do the same thing. We're all here to practice this Eightfold Path. We're all here to realize Nibbana. That's the only purpose of this community. And we're trying our best to make everything as good as possible for doing that. We can never do everything right. We can never get everything perfect. But we're doing pretty well here in terms of having the support for everything that we need. So it doesn't get too much better than this in this kind of world system, as far as we know. So try to support each other by staying silent when there's nothing to say. Okay, that is a support for everyone in the community. If people are silent when there's nothing to say, then the monastery is quiet, and those people who want to practice carefully with their mindfulness and their meditation can do so without disturbance. Okay, so please, that gift of silence is a very precious gift for each other. So let's see if we can offer that gift to each other as often as possible. We're all friends, okay? We've all had plenty of tea time chats and you know, all of these kinds of things. We know each other well enough and so on. We don't need to socialize, okay? Then the next one is right action, and so this refers to keeping of the precepts. And of course, you know, we should all have a good idea of what the precepts are according to our own particular vows that we've taken, and so to be very careful about those things. Take an extra care with things like looking after the ants or the insects in your kuti. Take an extra care with not to steal anything. We talked about this a little bit earlier today, with, say, the food in the kitchen, anything around the monastery, even little things. Have a great sense of shame about using those things which are not yours. If you're in doubt, then ask, is it okay to use this? Okay? And and then you won't have that feeling of remorse that comes from that. Sexual misconduct. So just keep your hands to yourselves, all right? No hanky panky. And this also is something that's like a gift of respect for each other, because of course it's natural that when you have people living together, that people will be attracted to each other, and that's natural. That's human. That happens in this community. We have both men and women living here. It also happens if you have a same-sex community. The same thing happens no matter what you do. You can't avoid it. Okay? Remember that everybody who's staying here for this period is doing so because they want to keep celibacy, because they have seen the pleasures and the rewards that they can get from sex, and that they've decided, no, I just don't want to do that anymore. It's too complicated. It's a hassle. I just want to leave that. I'm going to leave that to one side. Some of us might do that for the whole of our lives. Some of us maybe do it just for a period of time. It doesn't really matter. But for that period when we've taken on that vow, then please, everybody should respect that, and remember that this is something that is very important, very fundamental to the structure of the monastery. And so not only can it very severely affect our own practice, our own intention, our own emotional stability and those things, it can also distract and destroy somebody else's practice, and it can also be an extremely destructive influence within the community, but also without the community in terms of how the community is perceived from outside. So at all of those levels, kind of sexual misconduct within a monastic community is very destructive. If you really can't stand it, just leave and go and do what you have to do, alright? There's no problem with that. Anybody can, you know, monks and nuns can disrobe whenever they like if they're just too desperate. That's alright. It happens all the time. Usually you can go and play around for a few years and then you think, bloody hell, I'm out of here, so you come back again. That's okay. Or for the lay people or whatever, you know, if sometimes it does just get too much, whatever, then that's all right. And you say, well, it's just too much, I'm out of here. So, okay, so that's oh, yeah, drink and drugs and stuff, don't drink. don't smoke dope or anything like that. Cigarettes, if you're going to smoke cigarettes, do it outside the monastery. Don't do it on monastery grounds. Just walk out to the front and do it out there. You are a pariah. Next one, right, livelihood. Okay, right, livelihood. While we're staying here, then of course the monastery subsists on dana and donations, so everything we receive is given as a freely offered donation. That means that we have to treat it with the utmost and total respect. We have to use only those things that are necessary and not use things that are excessive or unnecessary. We have to remember that everything that we've got has been supplied not only through the money, the hard-earned money of the lay supporters, but also through their time and effort that it's taken them to earn that money. And so treat everything with a huge degree of respect and care in that regard. And for the lay people staying here, then I know that people have a different levels of, you know, financial status or health or whatnot, so financial how much money they have. So everybody just does what they can, and I'm sure people try to give dana and donations and so on to whatever extent that they're capable, and so that's very gratefully received. Those people, but whatever people can give is very gratefully received, and what you do in terms of the work and the chores and the time and so on is also very gratefully acknowledged and appreciated by everyone here. So next factor of the path is right effort. So okay, that means basically not standing still. Okay, it means that we should be always progressing in good dhammas. We've already made a lot of efforts just to be here. We've made a lot of efforts to get the monastery together. We've made a lot of efforts to undertake our vows. We've made a lot of efforts to study our dhamma, to decide to let go of whatever we've let go of to become here. All of those things. And now we need to continue those things. We've got a strong basis in renunciation. We've got a strong basis in sila. We've got a strong basis in generosity. We've done the learning and the study. We have a reasonable understanding of the Dhamma. We know what we're doing. We can use our time effectively. And so we need to apply that, put that into practice. Yeah? push that little bit, not too much, but push that little bit, get up a little bit earlier, stay up a little bit later, clear your mind in meditation. When mind is very peaceful in meditation, then your natural need for sleep will just gradually drop off. It doesn't mean to force yourself or anything like that, but just don't compare yourselves. When somebody, I was with Ajahn Dunn, and he's one of the really great meditation masters, students of Ajahn Chah, and somebody asked him this question about how much should I sleep, and he said, well, there's no real standard, you know, people have different amounts of times they need to sleep according to their own constitution. So don't be comparing yourself with others as to say, I need this much or I need that much. Some people who have very good meditation can get by with almost no sleep at all. Some people may be, you know, even fully enlightened and have great meditation, but they still need to get a reasonable amount of sleep. It seems to be very individual. So you need to judge that for yourself. But don't indulge in sleep, don't overdo it. Get enough rest so that your mind is bright and happy and clear. And it enjoys its meditation. Okay, so when you go to bed, you should be looking forward to getting up and doing your meditation. make sure to don't do too much sitting meditation and too much samatha, straight samatha practice. The Buddha said that if you do exclusively do samatha, tranquility practice, the mind will incline towards dullness. Okay, so you need to balance your samatha practice firstly by doing other kinds of things, like doing more active investigation, reflection, chanting and so on, but also physically by getting onto your walking path and doing some walking meditation. In the forest tradition, walking meditation is one of the keys to practice. Some of the forest ajahns just mainly walk and do only a little bit of sitting. So classically, you do walking meditation when you go back from your meal, get back to your kuti, and then spend an hour on the walking meditation path. And you know, in Bundanoon in the winter time, obviously it's a bit intimidating to get out there at 4 o'clock in the morning and be walking up and down. But usually in the late morning and the afternoon, the sunny days, it's very beautiful to be on the walking path. And so to spend your time doing that is really good. Really helps to balance your energy, keep your body fit, and makes your samadhi more kind of durable, long lasting. So do a lot of walking meditation to keep your energy balanced. But also do some other things apart from walking and sitting meditation, then break it up with a little bit of other things, a little bit of chanting, a little bit of just going for a walk, a bush walk, a bit of yoga or tai chi, something like that. And that will kind of keep your mind a little bit fresh. But, you know, it's important to get used to being comfortable. Just to be alone in your kuti or in your room for many hours every day. And this is something that's very different for different people. Some people just naturally just love it and that's all they want to do. Other people, it's really hard. And so you just have to cultivate that. Just to think, I'm going to go back to my kuti now. Nothing's going to happen until I come out from my kuti for the meal tomorrow. And I'm just going to be there alone by myself. And it's just going to be so wonderful. And it's going to be the most beautiful time you can spend. And so you just have time to just sit and do nothing. Or just watch the clouds go by. You know, watch the trees grow. Just not do anything. And so it's so precious to be able to have the chance to do that. And the next factor of the path is right mindfulness. So I could go on some length about this particular one, but basically just be mindful, all right? Don't want to have it in the rain tree. And one of the things to remember is just to try to keep that continuity between your meditation and what you're doing after the meditation. So take that extra few seconds when you finish meditation to say to yourself, okay, I finished meditation, I'm going to get up, I'm going to whatever, I'm going to go to the toilet, or I'm going to make a cup of tea, or I'm going to do walking meditation, I'm going to read a book, and I'm going to do it mindfully, and I'm going to be mindful of my posture in doing that. And so you make that determination, then you open your eyes mindfully, you sit up from your meditation, stand up, stretch your legs mindfully, take each step mindfully and carefully, and really try to slow down your actions in your kuti, and just try to really focus on just one action at a time and being mindful of that one action. And if you can do that, that will make your meditation progress much, much more smoothly. Okay, so that's always a good thing to remember. And the last factor, of course, right, samadhi, right, concentration, which means four jhanas. So get into jhanas as much as you can. And so again, I'll be talking more about these, focusing more on the meditation aspects of the path a little bit later in the retreat, so I don't want to talk about that too much right now. So remember these things, and remember at the beginning of it, like each time that you do a retreat or something like that, in a way, the course of the retreat should echo or like go over again the shape and the pattern of the path as a whole. That means that, you know, no matter how advanced that you are, or you think you may be in your practice, when you start the retreat, just go right back to the beginning, okay? Focus on those really beginning basic dhammas. Getting your sila right, cleaning your kuti, clearing anything away that's unnecessary, all those kinds of things. You just focus on those things in your first few days and make sure everything's right. Then gradually start to put more effort into your meditation. And when you start your meditation, again, start your meditation right from the beginning. Don't think that, oh, I've been doing this practice for so many years, so I can just sort of, you know, jump into the deep end of it. Just start right from the beginning and build it up step by step, as you did when you first learnt your meditation object. Okay? And this is something that I remember Ajahn Brahm said. And even such a talented meditator as Ajahn Brahm, and he said that when he starts his retreats, he would just beginning of his retreat, just focus on watching his breath, and just really try to make that as the actual physical feeling of the breath as clear and as defined and as solid as possible. And that's what he would do. So don't neglect these things, and don't despise them or think that you're beyond them. The more attention we put into those basic dhammas, then the more easily and fluently the advanced dhammas will arise out of them. Okay, so I think that's about all I wanted to talk about for this evening. Just a brief overview of the Eightfold Path and some tips for the kind of the attitude for the rains retreat. So any comments or questions?
Poopy, let's start. Annamayang namo varakataya sadhu karanta dhamase. Sadhu, 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 sadhu.
Bye.